Hello and welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I am Ness Jones and I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is the lovely...
Stacey Bell in the US with Focused Fun. Today we are talking about building security. So let me explain what we mean by that. So we're looking here at the difference between safety and security. So come with me on this journey. Think about if you're a little claustrophobic and you're in a dark closet that has like the clothes like pressed all around you, You're technically safe, right? But you don't feel safe. And that feeling of not feeling safe is a lack of security, right? So with our dogs, a lot of times they're physically safe, but they don't feel safe for whatever reason, right? So building security happens during our training session as a normal course of us helping dogs feel home alone and happy, but it can also happen outside of our training too. So we want to kind of cover all of that today in helping our dogs feel more secure, not only because it's a welfare issue, but also because if your dog is feeling more secure overall, then chances are they will do better in training sessions.
I really like your analogy. It's a good analogy. Thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, you're completely correct. I do get claustrophobia too. So, but yes, just because I'm safe doesn't mean I'm secure. No, other way around. Right. Just because I'm secure doesn't mean I feel safe.
I was right. So like you're talking about ways that we help dogs feel safe or secure in training is we manage absences. So we don't leave the dog longer than they're comfortable. We start where the dog is comfortable. So we don't push the dog outside their comfort zone. And then we kind of keep them in that comfort zone by going at their pace during training. So those are the three kind of main things that we do in training to help a dog feel secure about being home alone.
That's actually interesting because when I'm talking to people about their dog separation anxiety, maybe they've reached out to me for some, you know, some help. I talk about the whole threshold thing, and obviously over threshold is where they're feeling, you know, panicked, et cetera, et cetera. But I call this under the threshold, the line, you know, anything under the threshold, I call it the safe zone. So, yeah, that's where we want to keep our dogs, in the safe zone where they feel good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's really important because, you know, because dogs don't learn how to feel comfortable while home alone when they're feeling panicked or anxious or even just like on the verge of panic or anxiety or any of that. They learn that being alone is safe through those positive or neutral experiences.
Yeah. And we're trying to build up that bank of safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So outside of training sessions, there are also things that we look at when we're working with clients to help them feel more secure all around and to help set them up for success and to build their welfare. So one of these is something that we've talked a lot about before, and it's just knowledge of body language and then responding to that, right? So if I'm walking down the street with Rowan and he sees a man carrying like a bunch of stuff and it's kind of at a distance and he's like starting to, you know, do some whale eye or his mouth is getting tight or his tail tucks or something like that, then seeing those behaviors and then saying, okay, how can I help support Rowan through this? More distance, turning away, you know, whatever the situation calls for, but kind of being able to read your dog and know when they're starting to get anxious and then either support, well, supporting them through that, whatever that looks like, depending on the situation.
Yeah, understanding your dog's body language and knowing that, sorry, I'll just mute that. knowing dog's communication signals and body language, but also your dog specifically is pretty essential, whether we're talking about separation anxiety training or general life mm-hmm. experiences. It's really important.
Yeah, it really is. And then just kind of along those same lines is, you know, knowing what in your dog's life is stressful or frustrating or induces anxiety, and then taking steps to either manage that or support your dog through it, through training or medication or both. And some of the examples can be things that maybe happen once a year, like maybe the vet. Some things can be more regular, like grooming maybe, or for dogs that are afraid of strangers or dogs that they don't know, it could be every time they go outside, right?
Or traveling in the car even. And that one,
traveling in the car, is another one.
Common one, like, you know, it happens quite a lot, mm-hmm. a common occurrence, yeah.
Yeah, or noises if they're fearful or of noises. So that can happen too. So just looking at all of the sources of frustration, fear, anxiety in your dog's life, and then assessing what can we do to minimize them? How can we support my dog through it? Is there, you know, a medication piece of it? Is there a training piece of it? Is there a management piece of it? And how do those pieces fit together to help minimize the impact on your dog?
Yeah. What else might be on your list there, Stacey?
What else is on my list? I do think so for a lot of dogs, particularly dogs that suffer with anxiety, agency can help really help them, right? So giving them a choice in situations. Yeah. So Bria, who was on the show some episodes ago, is fearful sometimes of new places when she goes on a walk, or sometimes it's a familiar place, but there maybe are different types of people there or more people than usual or whatever. But so what Megan has done with her is she gives her a choice. So, you know, she can, if they're driving to a new place and she gets there, instead of pulling Bria out of the car, if Bria's not ready, she just opens the car, snaps on the lead and gives her time. So she can either jump out and sniff around and decide to get back in the car, or she can stay in the car and say, no, this isn't for me today. And they can go back home. And that's been a really big life changer for Bria, is that we've seen her grow in confidence in more circumstances because she's got freedom to say, no, this isn't for me. So that, you know, is maybe a little bit scary or frustrating for some owners or pet parents to think of like, I'm going to drive 15 minutes to the hike and then we're going to turn around and go home. But, you know, that just trying to be flexible with what your dog is thinking or feeling or, you know, wanting in that moment can really make a big difference.
Choice is huge. It's like in dog training now, never used
it
to.
It really is.
Yes, it, but, you know, giving your dog choice, even if it's, you know, would you prefer a piece of apple or a piece of banana, you know, even something as basic as that, it gives the dog, as you say, that confidence. We do everything for dogs, don't we? We make all their decisions for them. We say, you're going out for a wee, you're going to have your dinner now, you're going to, you know, go to bed now, you're going to go for a walk now, or whatever it is,
right.
We make all their decisions. And to be able to give them that back or something back, gives them a different perspective on life, I think. Yeah.
It really is. It really is. And just trying to like bring it into not only training. I mean, we do this in training a little bit with like, you know, giving them free roam, giving them a choice of where they're going to rest. Some dogs that I've worked with kind of have like an opt out. Like if in a couple of their warm-up steps, they're like, you know, I can't handle this, then we stop training for the day because, you know, they've said that today is not the day for me. That can be really a helpful way to give them a little bit of agency there. Another one is like, you know, on walks, Rowan, like I give him, if we're on a trail and another trail intersects, you know, I just pause and let him choose which trail do you want to go. I mean, as long as I know where the essentially where the trails go and I'm not going to get lost, like I like to do that for him and just, you know, go where he leads me in that.
Coyotes and wolves or bears in your neighborhood?
We have coyotes. Can I just tell you?
Yes.
That two nights ago, a coyote, so we have some land, not a giant amount, but we have some land and, you know, we have lots of wildlife here, but there was coyote poop on one of our bridges.
Ooh.
And so I was like, yeet. But Rowan was so interested in it. He didn't eat it, thank goodness, because, you know, that's always an option. But he would like sniff it and then he would like follow a trail. Like his nose was to the ground. He would follow a trail and then he would lose the trail and he would come back to the poop again and he would, you know, go back and find it. It was really enriching for him. He had the best time with that. And that's like the one time he drools. He's not like a very drooly dog, but when he's like sniffing something out like that, he'd like just drool in. He was living his best life.
Wow. And was he weeing on anything? Like, hey, this is my territory.
On the poop directly.
He did.
He weed right on it.
Yeah.
He's like, nah. So, but yeah, every once in a while I'll find like some bones or.
Okay.
Like feathers or something.
You've never come across a one. It would be dangerous for
not people. On our property, but like we have like a farmer's field like at the top of our neighborhood. And we've seen some there. And no, they run from us. I think in some areas they can be a bit bolder.
Yeah.
With people, but when they saw us, they ran, and luckily Rowan recalled because
So to say, what if he took off and didn't come back?
No, but he did. He recalled. But
fascinating.
They did eat our chickens.
Do you have chickens now? Then, or was that like that's enough?
We didn't. It was very upsetting. Chickens actually have pretty fun personalities, and which I was surprised at. I wasn't expecting to see so much personality in the chickens, but like I really loved our chickens, and then the coyotes got them, so now I haven't gotten chickens after that. We have no chickens now.
I don't blame you. I think I'd feel it was a bit of a traumatic experience. I wouldn't want to
So
and you don't get foxes there then?
Yeah, we have foxes.
So how do you know it wasn't a fox that got your chickens and not a coyote?
Well, I don't know for sure, but the coyotes, there's a lot of coyote sightings in our area, so I just blame everything on them, honestly. It's probably not fair. It's probably not fair, but we have fox, coyotes, raccoons.
Oh.
The owls are really active. They talk all the time outside. And so I don't like, we have our cat, she's allowed out during the day, but not like only when I'm out because there's too many things possible.
Scenarios. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So
she's in the house and she is safe and secure.
She is safe and secure.
And when she's outside of the house, she's safe as well because you're there too.
Yeah, because I'm there. But if I wasn't there, she would maybe feel secure, but she wouldn't be safe. Okay, so what were we saying? Oh, agency. Yeah, so giving them a little bit of choice. Back to the topic, today's topic. The other thing is that, you know, it can be tricky with dogs that have separation anxiety, but giving them kind of a safe place in the house, but adding that element of agency there, right? So if it is a crate for your dog, leaving the door open so that they can go in or not.
I've certainly had clients who, when they're doing the training and the dog chooses to go inside the open crate because it's like a little fan in there, but
Right. And so, and I think that's the thing is that I think more people think dogs should really like crates than dogs actually like crates because of that whole den thing. But, you know, if you're thinking about a den, dens don't have doors, right? So giving your dog the option to go in the den-like area or not, or for some dogs, it's under the bed or under a table or just on their special mat. And I think the big thing with that, especially for dogs that are anxious, just generally, is that if they're using that place as a place to retreat, then leave them alone when they're there, right? Like give them that space because they're saying, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this, so I'm going to go in here or whatever the case is. If they're choosing to take time away, either maybe they need rest or maybe they don't feel comfortable with the situation, allowing them that space. So, you know, because my son is terrible about this, is like Rowan will retreat when things get too loud or too rambunctious, he'll like just go lay in his crate that doesn't have a door in my room. And my son will like go in there and give him a hug. I'm like, no, when he goes in there, that means leave him alone.
Give him some space. Yeah.
Yeah. Give him space. But of course, you know, not everybody listens to me. that's a big one, I think. One of them we talk about kind of a lot on the show, but you know, we can do that. Just making sure you're meeting your dog's needs. Like so exercise, enrichment, vet care, nutrition, you know, making sure you're looking at that big picture and meeting their needs. Because you know, if you're in pain, that can taint you feeling secure. Like you just feel vulnerable, right? Like that's something to look at. The other one is if your dog is hyper attached. So that's a bit more tricky. And we've done shows on that. Maybe worth revisiting again is you know, just helping building your village for your dog so that they do feel secure with more people than just you. So that does take a bit more work, but is totally worth it to give you some freedom and to reduce anxiety in your dog.
Get them to bond with other people than, you know, whoever their significant person is. That's pretty important, because if they are hyper attached, obviously, and you're not there, then they're going to freak out if they haven't built that bond already. So, I think traveling in the car for a lot of dogs is quite hard because, you know, and it could be something along the lines as, you know, something is almost innocuous. Like, that's not a word, is it? Innocuous. Is that a word?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. I just didn't say it right, or I didn't feel right coming out of my mouth. Let's put it that way. But you know, like puppies, like I don't know about you, Stacey, but I used to get car sick when I was a kid, but I grew out of it. And that's the case for a lot of puppies. They do get car sick and then they grow out of it. However, I think for some of them, maybe they start that, build that association. Car means I'm going to feel disgusting. They may not grow out of it. So we have to reframe that for them and make them feel that the car is okay. And that is probably going to be look like desensitization very slowly so that they stop associating the car with bad feelings and not feeling safe.
Yeah. That's a really, I think, common one is that they start off because they're car sick and then they, you know, make that connection. And then you just have to work through that, a training plan to help them realize, no, that's not a thing anymore.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, we're not just talking about vomiting, are we? I mean, some of them, lose their bowels as well.
Mm-hmm. I had a cat. Drool. I've had some that just drool.
Yeah. I had a cat. Oh, poor Pinky. He hated going in the car. I ended up getting a home vet
every
time he needed it, because he would not just vomit, he would poop and he would wee as well. He was that.
Oh, geez.
And I'm just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I can't do it to you. You know, like, it's not fair.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's not good for anybody. I mean, like, even if you're bringing Pinky to the vet, it's like, the vet's like, yee.
they would have to. Yeah. Because. Yeah. You have to have them in a crate, obviously. I think he would have done better outside of the crate in the car, but, you know, the danger of that if you have an accident or something. But,
yeah,
they would literally get them and take them out the back and wash them off and clean them up.
Oh, yeah. Poor baby. Yeah, you know, yeah. And that just makes it more traumatizing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, cars,
okay. Yeah, well, that's all I have on my big, long list.
Yeah. And I mean, we touched on vets just now, but I mean, if your dog is, you know, got a phobia with vets and doesn't feel safe in them, then we do have to look at things like maybe medication for those times. I mean, Chase certainly, you know, she's such a robust dog. She's very confident. She loves people. She just loves life. The only time she struggles is the vets, and the world is coming down, crashing down on top of her. So when she has had to go, she has had some sort of medication to take the edge off. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not nice. It's not fair.
No, it is. And you can't like really explain to them, right?
No,
like,
we have to do this.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you for listening or watching if you are on YouTube. And if you are on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. And if you are listening, make sure that you like, follow, et cetera, to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I think this was a really interesting conversation, because going back right to the beginning, you know, just because a dog is secure doesn't mean that they necessarily feel safe. So we need to look at that and know the difference. And I'm Ness Jones. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety and Dogs Decoded. But you can find me on nessjones.com, where you can actually book a 30-minute Zoom call. And it's free. And I can tell you all about my programs and how I can help you.
And I am Stacey Bell at Focused Fun. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Focus Fun Dogs, and you can find me on the internet at focusfun.com. Yes, I also do offer a free 15 to 30 minute consultation.
15 to 30 minutes.
I know. Well, I always say 15, but it ends up being closer to 30. Yeah. So then if you just do the range, you're covered. So thank you for joining us today, and we will see you next week, 2 weeks, next time.
And next time, actually, we have a special guest next time.
Woo!
So you will definitely be wanting to tune into this. Her name is Dr. Holly Tett. She is a human psychologist, but she is also a dog trainer. And she's going to be talking about having a dog with separation anxiety and how to emotionally work through that.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation.
Fabulous.
See you later.
Bye.